Supply Posse. The cost of making the podcast has increased significantly during the past few months. If we were to provide you with some PayPal details or perhaps Buy Me a Coffee details, would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim at artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram. Today's guest is an artist recommended to me by a recent guest on the podcast who also happens to be a listener of the Posse. Now, I love how intertwined these conversations are becoming. A guest recommends someone who recommends someone else and so on and so forth. It kind of feels like there are threads that are tying us all together, both the listeners and the people I speak to and bring the conversations of to you. And it's such an honor to be able to facilitate these conversations and continuing unraveling all of these artist threads. So today's guest, as you may have seen when you read the title, is Crystal Tan. She is an artist who creates some beautiful, stunning work, which we will talk about in a sec. But Crystal, welcome welcome to the Art Supply Posse. Thank you so much for being here. I'm just delighted you're joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kim. I'm very excited too. And I'm also very curious to know who your other guest was, who recommended me, but I guess we'll find out in a bit.
Yeah, well, it was actually, her name is Nikki Normandale, and she took part in one of our, actually, it was a relatively recent episode we put it together where we have people talk about their favourite three art supplies, and I'm pretty certain that she was the guest who suggested you because she came, now this could be wrong, Nikki, please don't yell at me. We talk every day over online, on Discord. We have a chat all the time. But I'm pretty certain she came back to art and she found your channel when she was wanting to learn, you know, watercolor and painting and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And I'm pretty certain she, yeah, because she gave me a list of people and you're one of them. And I'm as soon as, it's that thing, you know, like someone recommends you someone and, of course, you go and have a look before you reach out to them because you're like, I've got to feel like I can gel with this person. And I saw your art, Crystal, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. What is she doing? This is incredible. We need to talk to her. So here you are. We're thanking Nikki and we're thanking you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much, Kim. Thank you. This is the first time I'm doing a podcast, so I'm a bit nervous and not sure where this is going, but I do know myself. I like to talk, so yeah.
Look, and that's all that matters. We just talk and we talk art, so it's good.
Yeah, cool, cool, cool.
So probably, I guess, the most important question, or at the very least the first question I'm going to ask you is, can you tell us who is Crystal Tan?
So Crystal Tan, I am going to be 43 this year. Let's start there so you have an idea. I'm a mom of two boys, 8 and 10 years old. I am an artist right now, but I'm also a yoga teacher. I live in Australia, Victoria, in this beautiful region called Upper Yarra Valley, surrounded by mountains and rivers. And I'm originally from Singapore, thus the strange accent. I paint mainly flowers in watercolor, and I've been pretty obsessed with it for the last 3 years. That's kind of who I am. I have a YouTube channel. I paint, and that's kind of like my life right now.
Yeah. So yours is a relatively new story in terms of becoming an artist. So let's start with that. How did Crystal go from being Crystal the mum, the yoga teacher, et cetera, et cetera, to Crystal also who is an artist?
Yeah, yeah. I never did art as a child, so I tell the story a lot because when you hear a lot of people's different artist backstories, you always hear like, oh, as a child, I love to paint and, you know, I love drawing and I love to mess around with art supplies and all that. I never did that at all. I've always been drawn to other kinds of arts, like writing is my first love, like writing and words and poetry. I wanted to be a writer when I was a child. And then, of course, I I fell into music. I loved music and I wanted to be a musical artist. I wanted to perform, actress, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And visual arts had never appealed to me in the sense that, I don't know, maybe I was just never surrounded by any other arty people in my life and no one showed me the way. And in Singapore, most of the schooling and the education there is very, very focused on hardcore academics like math and language and science. So art was just not at all. I mean, I never even learned color theory, like, you know, green plus, I mean, red plus blue equals purple. Like, that wasn't even taught to me in school. So I literally learned all of that.
Wow.
Yeah,
so, that's
it. Yeah. Yeah, really, at all. Like, art was just not a thing.
I remember learning that as a young child.
That's what I hear a lot, yeah.
And my brain was blown. I was like, oh, my goodness, you can take these two colours and make another colour? Yeah. Like, this is, like, mind-bending stuff. That surprises me.
Yeah, so I've never been exposed to that. And so I just kind of lived my life without any art. I mean, I like going to art galleries, but that was just, you know, for like culture and understanding of history. And I was attracted to all those things, but not the actual art. But I knew I kind of like pretty flowers and I liked bright colors. Like when I dress, I often am, you know, very drawn to bright colored clothing and how I decorate my house and all of that. So that was just that inkling of like, I like bright colored, happy things. So it was only during the first global pandemic lockdown. But I mentioned Melbourne because, like, I'm sure you know, in Australia, Melbourne's lockdown was like the longest and the harshest.
Yeah.
And it was just so horrible. During one of the first lockdowns in 2020, I was stuck at home with my children. And a friend of mine recommended this art channel for kids. So I was like, yeah, let's do some art online with the kids. And I played it. It was called Art Hub for Kids. And I, at that point, was even resistant to learning anything online. You know, I was still very old school. Yeah, I was like, no. Anything I want to learn, I have to go to an actual class. That's me. Yep. I like tactile, like to see people. And learning things online, that was just so strange. But through Art Hub for Kids YouTube channel, I actually started drawing with the kids and I'm like, wow, I actually can learn stuff online. So that's like step one. And then step two was I started to see all these recommended videos to me as YouTube does. And the one that caught my eye was Jenna Rainey's 10 Easy Flowers to Paint in Watercolor. And because we had nothing to do at home, and this, I swear, I would never do it in my regular life because, you know, busy life. But I was like, oh, so bored. Let's try. I got my kids' watercolor set and I followed a YouTube tutorial and that was it. I was hooked. I'm like, wow, I can do this. This is actually quite nice. And because maybe I've never done art in my life, I have like super low standards as to what is pretty. From the beginning, I thought I was amazing. Like, I was so impressed with my skills. And that's how it all started. I really, and it just started from there. I just kept going. And I think a lot of artists have very similar stories as I have. You know, YouTube taught me everything. So it's quite strange how when people say, oh, are you a self-taught artist? And I can't say I'm a self-taught artist because I didn't teach myself. YouTube taught me, you know. I would be nowhere by myself. Like, I can't just, you know, get a book from the library and learn. Like, I could never do that, so.
Sure. I think what's interesting about it, though, is, like, you, in many ways, you're the ideal, and I don't quite have the right word, like, the ideal person for this because you have gone in with such a low expectation, like, right, you were literally bored. You've just said you were bored. Let's do something about this boredom. So therefore, unlike, say, maybe me, and I'll use myself as the example because why not, if I go and learn something new, like a new technique, a new skill, a new thing, quite often I will finish it and go, oh, that's terrible, right? And it may not be that bad, but my expectations are so high. And part of that is because I'm really hard on myself, like, and I'm aware of that. But, like, you know, I would try something new. And sometimes if I judge it too harsh, I may not or be very reluctant to try it again. Whereas you've gone, well, this is fantastic. I am great. And let's keep going. Yeah. And I think, but that's brilliant because you haven't got that silly voice inside you saying, don't do this crystal. This is terrible crystal. Oh my goodness. What are you doing? You're just doing it and loving it. And I mean, that's perfect. Like that is just, I'm so jealous of you.
I think so. You know, like everyone said, like, you know, try to channel your inner child who is unafraid and just play and think that everything they make is marvelous. I feel like I am that, you know, because I really have so little expectations. No one taught me any way of how to do anything that, so when I hear like what you just said, I hear that so often. I hear like, oh my gosh, I'm so self-critical. Everything I paint sucks. I'm always comparing myself to others. And I ask myself, why do I not really have that? When I look at other artists that are way ahead of me or are just painting such beautiful paintings, I'm actually super fueled to learn how to get there. Yeah. And like so inspired, like, yeah, let's try. And I know my attempts won't never be close to what they are doing because, you know, they've had years and years and years. But maybe I'm still new at this, and I perhaps 10, 15 down the years down the road, I would not feel the same way. So maybe I should just hold on to this in a sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just want to put a pin in this part of the conversation for a second, because I am curious to know a couple of things in relation to your children. So they're not being educated in Singapore, they're being educated in Australia, which, as we've already sort of briefly touched on, is a completely different thing. And whilst it's been a very long time since I've been at primary school, I've got two young nephews who both are, and I know art is a big component of part of their learning and, you know, their education and that sort of stuff. Do you see in them, in your kids, that interest still to do art now that they're back at school as opposed to doing all the everything online? Like, is that something that, are you encouraging that in them perhaps because you didn't have it there as something for available to you?
Yeah, so my children, they're here now. They've been studying in Australia for 5 years, and they actually also go to a Steiner school. So I don't know if you're familiar with...
A little bit,
Yeah, so it's quite an alternative school, and it's really heavily focused on arts and performance and drama and music and all the creative stuff. So they do so much art at school. They do so much painting, so much more than I've ever done, until I think they're actually like, they're not even amazed by what I do. They it's not, I'm not expecting them to be amazed, but for them, they're like, oh yeah, mom's just painting again. Yeah. And, so for them, it's just background stuff. Once in a while, they'll come and go, oh, I'm going to paint something as well. And it's funny because they're not into watercolors. They're always drawn to acrylics. They want to get the easel out, a nice canvas, and we have some acrylic paint, and they mess around with that. And so I definitely am very happy that they are now growing up. I mean, we came here for, you know, not just the art, but for outdoors and nature and just a more holistic way of being children and growing up. And so I definitely don't feel, I feel very, very, what's the word? Like encouraged and hopeful that they will have a way more balanced childhood. But actually, I mean, in fact, feeling a little bit scared that they're not going to be spelling as well. Or reading. I'm going the other way now. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe we should go back to Singapore for a few years or something. I'm having too much fun.
I think part of that is just being a parent. I think, like, do you know what I mean? I'm sure if it wasn't quite so much focused on the art, if it was more on the math or something, you'd be like, oh no, it's like, do you know what I mean? I think it's just this whole thing of you want your child to be the best version of themselves as possible. So therefore, correct. I think you sort of see something that might not be where you maybe think it should be. And that's like, perhaps just a bit too judgmental. I think parents just do that. You know what I mean? You want the best for your kids. So, of course, you're going to go, oh, you should be better at this or that.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we always want to give them what we didn't have. And
Yes, that's right.
And I feel like we are, so I can't complain there. They really have the best school life and the best life here.
Yeah, well, that's lovely to know. So heading back to you and your own art, mm-hmm. art journey, your art practice. Mm. So watercolor is what you fell in love with. Have you actually tried any other medium, or is it just you've been so focused on watercolor that's where you're at?
I have tried a bit of acrylics, and I'm feeling very, very interested to dabble more, mainly because I feel like the possibilities of layering is so much more in acrylics, because watercolor, there's always a point where you have to stop. And I do get jealous when I hear about acrylic or oil painters like working on a painting for days or months, covering up what they don't like and altering and moving and all of that, which really appeals to me. Mm-hmm. Also, it feels like watercolor painters are not sort of taken as seriously in terms of like in the fine art world. I'm not sure if you know or noticed that, but watercolor artists have always been sort of like, oh, either like a hobby thing or it's related to illustration, children books illustration, or surface pattern kind of thing. So not that I care about the title, but maybe I do. I don't know. I'm just exploring.
It's ridiculous though, isn't it? Like when you sort of generally think, or certainly from my perspective, when I think about my education at school, you know, it was always oil paintings at the top, and then it was acrylic, and then it was watercolor, and then everything else sort of underneath it. And it's so stupid in many ways, because at the end of the day, who cares what you use, as long as what you're creating is what you're trying to express, you know, what you're trying to get out. And if it's working with that medium, fabulous. If it's not, we'll play with another one. I still feel like it's kind of that whole world and that whole thought is kind of like it's a gatekeeping exercise, you know, and I always, and this is bad, and I'm sure there's someone listening who's probably going to be mad at me, but I always think of old white men and they're kind of gatekeeping the art world, and, you know, they're looking down on all of us if we don't use oil painters. And it's just like, well, but, and the other thing too, I think, is, it's so much easier to get our hands on materials now, right? Like, obviously, you were in lockdown, so I'm imagining once you decided you had had enough of your kids' watercolour, you had to buy better quality watercolours, right? And we can access this stuff so much easier now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. I agree with you. And I think the world, it is changing, though. Like, I'm seeing a lot of charcoal pencil artists that are, you know, selling their paintings for a lot of money, and they are becoming, you know, they have the same sort of like status as an actual real artist. And supplies and all of that. During lockdown, I just went online straight away and ordered all of it. Of course, it took a long time for a lot of the supplies to arrive, but, you know, we had time, so just waited. And then it came. Finally, it was so fun. But also, back to your question, I also am just recently quite obsessed with trying mixed media.
Oh, yes, great.
Yes, it's just a recent obsession, because I guess it's because when you paint in one medium for a while, which I think I stuck with watercolor for a good 2.5 years, and I felt like just in that medium it was just so much to learn, and even just the I actually didn't even go to the art store at one point for maybe 8 months, because I bought so many things at the start, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I have enough, so I just used those things, all the paper, all the paint, and I was so happy. And then suddenly something sparked off again. I'm not sure what it was. And I started buying and I started going. And now I just can't get enough. So I've been playing with, Neo colors and ink blocks. What else? Inks and a bit of charcoal. And just mainly in my sketchbook, because I'm really mm-hmm. not sure how to translate those things yet into, I don't know, actual pieces of art. Yeah, so I'm...
But that's fun, because so fun. You're exploring and you're getting used to these new mediums. And even if you're not consciously aware of it, there would be part of your mind that's sort of thinking, all right, so I can take this floral, this beautiful loose watercolor floral that I've created, and then I can add in charcoal and I can add in, you yeah. know, a marker, and suddenly it becomes this other thing. And I think that's just part of the fun of it, right? It's just exploring and playing. And you're so right, like it does fun. Take a long time to get used to a medium, but it's still really fun to play around with other ones as you're going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've also been sort of like exploring different courses. I had just bought a bundle from Laura Horn. I don't know if you know Laura Horn. She's quite a prolific abstract artist and teacher. Mm-hmm. So now you know, you should go check her out. She's clearly prolific. She's prolific. She's selling her courses, and I think lots of abstract artists are quite influenced by her, because I've seen very similar works around by other people. So I just bought like a creative bundle course, and I'm slowly going through it and just playing my sketchbook and having just so much fun and exploring and discovering. And it's interesting when you do a course and you just follow a tutorial where you're following what the teacher's doing, and then you're like, oh gosh, am I just going to copy this teacher's style? But then I just keep trying on my own, and I realized like, oh wow, I'm doing different things from her. But you're learning, you're taking all the little things that interest you from what she's taught into your own work. Anyway, it's just an ongoing, super fun, super nourishing, fulfilling journey, this whole art thing. I'm really just waking up every day just being very excited to what's next, you know?
Yeah. I think the really good thing about that is, and, you know, it was interesting you saying how you were reluctant to do online learning because, you know, because of lockdown and things, we had no choice. Like if we wanted mm-hmm. to learn something, that was our only way around it, really. Yeah. And now you've kind of taken that and it's become such a part of you and your art and what you're doing. And, of course, you're sharing as well, which we'll get to in a sec. But I think in some ways the other really nice thing about online learning is because you're not in a room full of other people, so you can't see what other people are doing. So whilst you are sort of influenced by that artist's style and what they're teaching you, you don't have that thing of, oh, other people are doing this, why did I not do it this way? Like you're just so focused on your own thing, which is incredible because you've got no distractions. It's just you, it's the video or whatever, and your art. And I think that's really cool.
I had never thought about it that way at all, because maybe I've actually never taken an art class with actual people. No, not true. I did do an acrylic class with a local teacher last year, and there were 6 of us. But we all did different things anyway. But learning art online has been majority of my art learning. So I don't really know much else. But that said, you know, with social media, we are just exposed to so much art now. Mm. I don't even know how to handle the input sometimes. I don't know if you feel that. Yeah, it's just
definitely.
So many amazing art and the scrolling. It's a lot. It's wonderful, but at the same time, oh gosh, it's just mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm. It is, and I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll be scrolling or whatever and looking at all this amazing art and catch myself sort of thinking, gee, I wish I had time to do that. And then I'm like, well, maybe if I wasn't online scrolling, perhaps you could. Like, it's such a silly thing, and I think part of my own art practice is I like to work small most of the time because of the fact that you can dip in and out of it, often get something started and completed in a very short space of time because it's not a very big surface I'm working on, right? Yeah. So, like, you know, if I've only got a short space of time to do that, then it feels like I've got something accomplished or something achieved. But then You know, because I've got a few things I'd like to try, and I know they need dedicated time. Like, you know, they need at least a block of an hour, sometimes mm-hmm. more. And I think mm-hmm. I just can't make that work. And then, you know, you sort of think, well, not that I sit and scroll online for an hour at a time. There's just no way I could. I know people do it. I just couldn't. It just wouldn't work for me. But, you know, you sort of end up finding yourself going, where are my priorities? Why am I just observing and not participating, as in doing the art? Like, it's a weird space. It's a good thing, and it also can be a negative thing.
Yeah, it's crazy that scrolling guilt, like cycle that we uh-huh. do to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm the same with you. I've always only really, I don't think I can sit down for more than half an hour to paint mm-hmm. for one session. I just get impatient and I just can't sit there for hours and hours without a break, even though if it's a painting that's bigger, I need to take a break after 20 minutes because mm-hmm. that's just my rhythm. And it has been from the start. So maybe that's also, and watercolor is like, the way I paint is quite loose and fast. So yes. maybe that's why people are like always asking, how come you paint so much and so often and you're so productive? That has worked in my advantage because I actually do have a lot of content. Like, I actually have to hold myself back on Instagram because sometimes I paint five things a day and I'll be like, maybe I shan't, you know, post everything. But I do that on stories now, which is terrible. post. Oh, I just cannot stop sharing. But I hope I have not made people feel bad. And the thing about watercolor is that the setup is nothing at all, isn't it? It's just like, it's always there. It's very easy to clean up. So... yeah, social media, it is, it's actually crazy how, social media and art for me has started at the same time. So it's very, very inextricably linked. How about for you? Like, I mean, you've done art way before social media or?
Yes. Yeah. I don't remember a time I didn't do some kind of artistic thing. So I'm one of those people who's, you know, I've always, as a child, I was usually always drawing, and then sort of, I want to say I first started playing with a camera when I was maybe, and this by playing with a camera, I mean, you know, using a camera that belonged to my family, so it was nothing particularly special, but I must have been 10 or something, maybe even younger, you know, just taking photos of roses that were growing in our yard and all that sort of stuff. So I've always done something. So for me, actually, the social media thing to begin with was something I didn't participate in any more than I lurked. Like, I would scroll and I would observe and I would like, but it took me quite a while to build up any confidence to actually show anything. Because I guess part of it was just like not confident in what I was doing, you know, not good enough kind of thing. But why I've now gotten over that is a combination of like people, you know, I know listeners like to see what I do. So I'm sort of like, well, of course I'll share that. But also it's just like realizing that all of us are at a different level with our art practice, right? Like some of us have just literally bought their first palette of watercolors and their first pad of watercolor paper and brushes, and they're about to sit down and watch one of your YouTubes and having a go. Whereas others have been doing it for 30 years. You know, like we're all at this different level. And I just think it's fascinating. Like if I think of myself not as a creator but as an observer, I'm always interested to see where people are at that particular place and time, right? Like whether it's the person who's just learned or the person who's been doing it forever. And I think sharing both of those levels is just as important because it lets people realize that or see that when they've just started something, don't necessarily expect it to be perfect and that's okay. And that if you have been doing it forever, it still doesn't mean you're not learning anyway. Like I think we always learn.
And what is perfection? And there's no such thing.
Oh, exactly right. Yes,
it's really no such thing.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because when I started my art account 3 years ago, I was a complete newbie. And I remember just posting for the sake of having a neat grid-like tool to document the progress and just to look at all my beautiful, marvelous paintings in one screen. Really, I thought they were so good. And then I just started putting hashtags because I'm like, oh, that's what people do. Mm-hmm. And then you start to make friends. And all the people that were in my tiny community at the start were all at the same pace, you know? It was so cute. Like, we were all in this very new, like, we just started watercolor world and we all just shared. And everything I saw was, I felt like we were at the same level. Then slowly, these, like, expert, very more advanced painters would creep into my you know, I knew that they existed and I added them, and then that started to be like, whoa, okay. Oh, what a big world this is, actually. It's interesting how you know, you coming from a place where you've done it for a while and then you enter and you see the whole spectrum, where I just started, like, I was like that tadpole. And then now I'm like realizing the bigger world. That, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know about your YouTube channel, because it's one thing to have an Instagram with a perfect grid and all that sort of stuff. Why then did you start the YouTube channel, and why do you keep going with it? Like, what does that do for you as an artist, but also for the community that you've created around it?
All right, so I've actually never told this story to anyone before. Okay. So you'll be the first one.
Okay, we'll keep it between ourselves.
It's not a big deal. But so late last year, Pennsylvania Art School approached me on Instagram and said, "Would you like to teach an online course with our school next year?" And I'm like, okay, I've never taught teaching. I never taught watercolor. I never taught art. But of course, I said yes, because it was just an opportunity and I wanted to try something and push myself and was curious to explore this. And I was just incredibly flattered that they asked me, and I looked on their website and every other art teacher were like, did a fine arts and masters, and they had galleries and, you know, exhibitions. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing here, but they've asked me to do this. Let's try this. So they said as well, okay, send me your course outline and send me a video of yourself painting and just a demo or whatever your course is going to be about. So this was me going, oh, I have to record a video. Let's see. What do I need? So, okay, I guess my phone will work. And I had a microphone that I used to record yoga videos during lockdown 2 years ago, when I had to do these yoga videos for my students. So I had that gear, a bit of gear. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to try videoing myself painting and talking about what I'm doing. Seriously, that was just it. So I tried that, and after a few tech failures or forgot to switch on mic or forgot to, you know, all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is so hard. This is really, really hard. I'm never going to get it right. And then finally, I recorded something decent with just with my phone. And I said, okay, so I'm going to try to record an intro and outro, like how a YouTube video would be. You know, I was just channeling all the people I've watched. So I just did that on the fly, and I used iMovie, and I went to, I did mass communications in school 20 years ago. So I had some video editing sort of experience from, you know, back in the day. Yeah. So I opened the software and learned and just put some stuff together. And so this was me just trying out filming myself teaching, because I knew I had to teach an online course.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, I have this video. Why not put it up on YouTube? So I started a YouTube channel. I made a banner and a logo or whatever. And I just put three videos up there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a YouTube channel. Maybe I should tell my Instagram Instagram people. And 3 days later, I just say, hey guys, I have a YouTube channel. Go check it out. That's literally how it started. It was no like long strategy or intention or anything. So I put it out there, and And then, you know, once you do it one time, it gets quicker and quicker. And then sooner or later, I was just churning these painting videos out because it was so quick and easy to do. And I was obsessed with building my following and subscribers. And then I found out all about how to get monetized on YouTube. Like, you needed to reach 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. And I went right into that hole, like, oh, chasing this thing. And yeah, and then one of my videos went viral. 6 weeks into my channel, this one video went viral. It was something about 10 tips for new painters or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I got monetized. And yeah, that's just the beginning, the origin story of my YouTube channel. What happened was, along the way, I discovered my teaching voice, like my teaching style and the approach, and it all just comes naturally. And somehow I've been teaching yoga for a while now, and that's my teaching experience. That's how I teach a class, like a long guided meditation. That's movement meditation is how I teach my yoga class. And I think that sort of filtered into teaching painting. And the feedback I get now a lot of times through my YouTube channel is like, wow, Crystal, your approach is so calming. And you talk about, you talk about not being perfect and letting go and being loose and all the stuff that I love about painting. So,
well, that's what drew me to you, to your, because I went, when you were recommended, when Nikki recommended me, I went straight to YouTube. I didn't even go to your Instagram, because she'd said, I think she may have said in the conversation that you had on YouTube. So I went straight there. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. It is very calming, the way you, and the fact that you're not focused on trying to be perfect. It's just what you want in your art. Cause, you know, as you said, there's no such thing as perfect anyway, but you're not all uptight and you're not like, oh, it should be done this way. And it's just like, oh, this is the kind of content I want. Like, you know, it's just, and I think for a lot of people, like, you know, like me, for example, I work full time. So a lot of us, we do our art around that. And the last thing you want is someone, you know, going, oh, you have to use this color and you have to use this size brush and this size paint. You know what I mean? Like, you just want it to be fun, not some serious take this like it's the most important thing in the world. It's like, no one wants that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I always say, right, life is so stressful. There's so many things in life that we want to be perfect in. Like, for me, I'm really hard on myself when it comes to parenthood, like being a mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these other standards we have in our lives, like cleanliness and cooking and making sure I create the perfect life for my children with food and stuff. Art should be the opposite and totally accepting of who we are in our just, you know, crazy, chaotic mess. And to try to be perfect in art as well is just super exhausting. For me and for lots of people, should be an escape, a place where we, you know, enjoy every brushstroke and not, you know, have all this self-talk and criticisms and yeah. So I'm glad you got that from my channel and that people are resonating with that. So that feels just, this whole discovery of what I'm sharing people and how people are resonating with that is really been quite enriching for me and validating, and it makes me feel like I'm like onto something, you know, like
it's obviously what people want from you and just from art in general. I'm curious to know, like, because you've said that you create a lot. Does having a YouTube channel change your creation? Like, are you conscious of recording what you're doing, so if you've got the content? I wondered has that made things good, bad, or are you kind of in a middle place with it?
So for the first maybe 3-4 months, I was like, oh, I have to record every single painting that I'm doing so that it can turn into a video. And that was okay, But then it got really annoying because then I couldn't just paint. I had to set up every time,
yep.
right? I had to make sure the lighting was right. I couldn't, it was too harsh or too dark. And so that was very hindering. And also I was just painting random things but that's how I always have been painting. Like, oh, today I feel like a sunflower, I'll paint that. Tomorrow yeah. I feel like a bunch of a wedding bouquet and I'll paint that. So that was fine. Like I was still painting random. But after a while, I realized I just had a lot of paintings and videos and footage. and I didn't need that much. And I'm like, okay, seriously, I don't have to record every single one.
Yeah.
And then I started to back off and just maybe record the time lapse for the Instagram bit, which is a lot less setup. You just hit the button and then you paint.
Yeah.
So, but now I've come to a point where I realized that I was just giving too much time and energy to YouTube. It was very exciting at the beginning and that's all I thought about and all I wanted to do. So that was fine. Like at the beginning, you just follow the energy, right? Like just follow urges. And you just, if the energy is there, the urge is there, let's go. But I realized that it got to a point where I was just obsessing with every time I upload, it's a whole thing. It's so exciting. Like, oh, how many views am I going to get this time? Is it going to surpass my last video? Am I going to get and now that I'm monetized, it's also related to money. I'm like, it became coming just obsessive. And I said, I know I needed to scale back. So, and I knew I had a whole library of videos there already. And I also didn't want to spam everybody. And give, overload. So now I'm down to just one video a week.
Yep.
And I'm not even doing premieres anymore. I used to join the premiere and then while the video's playing, I'm there and it's just got too much. I had this whole big revelation about how I was just too addicted to my social media's growth and likes and comments and online community that I was totally ignoring my family and my friends. And I realized that, oh my God, this is a huge, huge problem. You know, it's like a real addiction.
It's easy to fall into that trap because it's like a dopamine hit, seeing the likes and seeing the comments.
Yes.
And because the vast majority of the time, the comments are really lovely. They're people saying, oh my goodness, this is beautiful. Or you've inspired me. I'm giving it a try. And that feels great. It feels wonderful when people say things like that. So it's very easy to fall into that trap because your family don't always say how great you are. Like, I'm sure they think that, but they're not going, hey, you're wonderful. Like, maybe they should. Maybe we need to encourage our families to tell us we're awesome more often.
I know, but that's not realistic,
No, that's right. Life, exactly.
When we have real life relationships, we got to work at it. We got to, it's got to be a give and take. It's even. Yes. And I'm also feeling like sometimes when I meet my real life friends and acquaintances in real life, I almost get impatient with them. I'm like, oh gosh, they don't even know what's going on with my life. I have to explain it all. And it's crazy how you can get so addicted to your online persona. And because then everyone sort of knows me better than my real friends. And I just found that really, really scary. I had this realization that I needed to work on my real life family and friends, especially when the kids are young. And I don't want to miss out on any of it. So I'm scaling back in terms of the YouTube thing.
Yeah.
And I am actually also also signed up for a course for surface pattern design. I haven't told anyone about it yet because, it's just something I just want to start learning from another Australian artist. Actually, her name is Cass Della. She lives in Noosa and it's all online and it's quite a big investment. But I kind of realize if I want to grow this art thing, it cannot just be fully about growing an online community. I really want to become a real artist, quote unquote, and see my art out in the world, on either on products or something. And I'm also doing an open studios in November, which is in 2 months' time.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and that's very much real life. A whole weekend where people are going to come in and see my art. I get to see real people. I got to talk to them. So I think, like, deep down, I knew that there was something very imbalanced about this online YouTube, Instagram world, and I needed to ground myself into reality a bit more. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where I am now. I'm trying to straddle both. And I want success online. I want to eventually create courses. I'm right now brainstorming ideas for an online course that I want to launch hopefully next year. But I want to also not rely on community, not rely on online community or membership. A lot of artists, especially with bigger followings, launching Patreons and memberships and Discord communities. And I know that I don't think that's where I want to go. I don't think I can spend time with nurturing online community and engagement and all of that, because when you are doing that and there's a monetary reward, which is your business, it still feels like forced and a bit like you're obligated to reply to a comment because they paid you money. You know what I mean? Like something doesn't feel really all that right. So anyway, I'm figuring that all out. But most importantly, I do spend a lot of time doing the art now. Like, I feel sometimes in the day, I've been painting and painting, and I'm like, oh my God, I should work on that, my business. But just trying to make that balance. So,
Would you, like with you saying about the open studio, would you also do actual in-person workshops and courses and things, like whether it's over a course of a couple of hours or a full weekend? Like, is that something else?
Yes,
of course, that steps you out of being exclusively online, which, you know, and I'm not going to knock online because it means, well, it's the reason why you and I are talking now, right? And it's how I can do courses from people that are in other countries. But also it is lovely to sit in a room with somebody and learn from somebody in person. And I was just curious to know whether you would, you know, think of that as well as another thing to add to your business.
Yeah. For sure. So I'm going to put together some dates for next year for online. Oh, sorry. See, I said online. For in-person workshops here in my studio.
Awesome.
So I have a really lovely backyard studio in my house, and I live in Warburton, which is this beautiful town, an hour and a half from Melbourne. So it's kind of like a retreat area as well. I currently do a monthly retreat for my yoga students, and I actually have one tomorrow morning that I'm preparing for. So that's been very grounding for me too. But you know what? I have realized that I sometimes dread that, because I'm like, oh my God, I gotta do this thing tomorrow with real people. What a pain. But then when I do it, when we do it, it's like, oh, yes, what would I be without this? I'll just be fully in the metaverse, you know?
I think we all do that. I think we, like, whether it's something we've planned to be the host of or something we're going to attend and you're all excited, and then generally in the lead up to it, something changes and you're suddenly panicking and thinking, why did I make this decision? This was the worst decision of my life, la da da da. It never is, or hardly ever is, you know? I can imagine it would be lovely having a yoga retreat. So bring on the art retreats as well, I think.
Yeah. So I'm also even like thinking of ways that I could combine yoga and art. And I have researched online, I've Googled yoga art retreat, and there are such, you know, they exist out there.
They do. Yes, they do. And you could definitely do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but then it sounds like a lot of work.
No,
can you imagine like the setup for yoga and then for the art? It's like double setup. But anyway,
because it doesn't have to be so intense. Like, people can bring their own yoga mats for a starters. People can bring their own art supplies. You don't have to do that. You don't have to over-engineer it. Let some of this fall back on the person. Because the other nice thing too is, like thinking of the person, the people that are coming, it is nice to bring your own supplies if you've got them, because you know how you get used to something? Like you get used to using a brush or a pen or a thing that you're always using. So it's nice to take that with you, and they can pack up their little art kit and their yoga mat and, like, you know, and then you haven't got quite as much preparation.
True. If people do have it, I don't know if everyone has. I don't know. I've never done I've never taught a live art class before, so who knows? But, yeah, there are things that I am perfectionist over, like things like that, like running a retreat. Clearly. Like, it has to be perfect. I have to over-deliver. It's got to be great, you know. That's
no,
on that side.
No. So I am curious to know, because we're sort of talking about supplies and stuff, do you have favourite, you know, do you have favourite paper that you like to use? Do you have a favourite brand of watercolour and pen and paints and things? Like, where are you with favourites? Or do you just use anything and everything?
Oh, no, I definitely have favourites. And so for paper, I definitely, I love Fabriano Artistico paper. The loose sheets, mainly, because the pads and the blocks can be a bit inconsistent, but the loose sheets are just glorious. They're creamy. They take the paint so well. I actually have a video which I think I compared Fabriano versus Arches. And oh my God, Fabriano wins 100%. But I also use Saunders and Waterford paper as well. And yeah, I do have Arches a couple here and there, but I'm very spoiled with the paper now. I can't go back to non-cotton just because it just moves so beautifully. For brushes, I love Princeton brand. They have such great brushes, all different series for different needs. The 4050 Heritage is one my go-to. I also love the Silver Black Velvet brushes. They're actually half natural and half synthetic, and they're a bit more expensive, but they're just very, very worth it. What else? Paints. Oh, paints, I do use a lot of brands, so I'm not very loyal, but my favorites are Holbein, M. Graham, and what else? I do like the Korean brands as well, like PwC Shinhan and Mission Gold, because they're actually super vibrant and not very expensive. Because I got them in Singapore, and I don't know, maybe it's
I was just about to say, did you get them in Australia or did you not? You got them in Singapore. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think they might be more expensive if you order in from here, but they're so cheap. Like $3 to $5 a tube of professional artists, you know, great 15 mil tube. So yeah, they're really good. But they're not like very posh like Dennis Smith, like they don't granulate, you know, that sort of thing, but they're just highly pigmented. And fun, which suits my style at the moment.
And I mean, you've got to enjoy what you're using.
Yes. And I'm in love with all the Caran d'Ache Neo Color. I have like maybe 25 colors now. I just want to get more off. And I am also dabbling into inks, my De La Rowney acrylic inks. Oh my gosh, so fun, so vibrant, so fun. Yes.
I think yes. It's always fun. It's fun to use stuff that you love, but experiment as well.
Totally. I have this really awesome art shop, like an hour from me is the closest one, Bayswater, and they have all the great brands. That's one of the best art shops I've been to. So
nice. That's always fun to have too. I think this has been such a fabulous conversation. I think we should probably wrap it up, because I get the feeling that you and I could probably talk forever, but maybe our listeners don't want to, you know, hear hours upon hours. So let's finish up with where would you suggest people find you online?
You can just look me on my website. It's crystaltanart.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram, Crystal Tan Art, on YouTube, Crystal Tan Art. And those are the places you can look for me. Sign up to my mailing list, and I email people updates, inspiration, all sorts of stuff.
Probably let's finish with one more little thing. If somebody has, they've listened to this episode, They've loved what they heard. They've never tried watercolor and they want to. What can you suggest to them?
Check out my YouTube channel.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's because that's how I found watercolor, YouTube. Maybe even if not my channel, there's so many amazing watercolor teachers on YouTube. Jenna Rainey was my first teacher. I watched almost all her tutorials. I love her style. I love the colors. Everything she does is just beautiful. Emily Fave is also a very, very wonderful teacher. She's so down to earth and she's also very casual in the approach. And I don't know, just pick up your kid's watercolor. Just get cheap ones from the dollar store, the $2 shop. You don't really need anything fancy. In Australia, the brand Montmartre has really good art supplies.
Yes, surprisingly so, isn't it? Yeah, I've got some of their acrylic paints and I'm like, this is better than I was expecting. I thought this was going to be awful and it's actually not.
Yeah. Yeah, so just pick up whatever. It doesn't have to be very expensive and just tune into a video and give it a go. And I feel like if it's just you messing around with no real instructions, like how I would not know what to do if I didn't have some kind of guide, some kind of teacher to show you a few things that you could do. It's so forgiving. It is so magical. Watercolor is... it's the best. Like, it's meditative, it's flowy, it's you can really get lost in it and enjoy yourself. It's all I can say, really.
That's the perfect way to end this conversation, Crystal. That was brilliant advice. Thank you so much again for making
thanks
time.
Thanks so really much, Kim. It. I really enjoyed chatting and get to chit chat my head off and really, really glad for the opportunity. I can't wait to hear the episode.